Thanks tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear Agnes Moorehead in Suspense. But right now, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This incredibly popular CBS show known as the last of radio's golden era. This from their first season on the air from CBS on October 8, 1949. It's the racehorse pile driver.
This is a horse on me. But I did find out that in a race for life and death, the police laboratory is where they make the photo finish. This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At Insurance Investigations, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he is an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Hartford Branch, Lloyd's Underwriters Association. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during investigation of the circumstances threatening the life of the insured, the racehorse pile driver. Or, he'd have been way off his feet if I didn't know my oats. Or, it's great to get a kick out of life so long as it isn't a kick in the head. Expense account item one, 18 cents, one package of cigarettes. You may consider this a personal item, but that's where this case really started. At the cigar stand, ground floor, terminal office building, here in Hartford. I'd come down in one of the elevators and noticed a little guy with a cane standing with a starter. After I passed him, I felt myself being pointed out. And not being the type who likes being followed for long periods of time, I gave myself a good reason to stop and look things over.
Hello, Mr. Dollar.
Hiya, Max. Give me a pack of Lucky's, will you?
I just sold you a pack when you came in.
I know. But things may really start smoking any minute. Here.
Good morning to you, sir. I've been led to believe that you were one Mr. John Dollar. Would that be a fact?
Yeah, I'm Dollar. What can I do for you?
Well, I am quite a famous fellow myself. Perhaps you've heard of the fabulous jockey Earl Sands?
Yeah, but...
Well, next to him, I was among the best. May I introduce myself? I'm the famous little Nettie Montana, sometimes called the short Johnny Longden. Shake hands.
Oh, how do you do?
Ah, to business. I think I have a way for you to solve my problem and make yourself an honest buck, besides.
Oh, now, whoa, pony boy, you're wasting your time. I don't bet the horses, and when I do, I don't buy chips from touts.
Oh, now, wait a minute, pal. I did not introduce myself for the purpose of being insulted. I will have you know that I, too, do not consort with touts. I will thank you to keep a civil tongue in your head.
Oh, I can see this is going to be one of those days. What is your problem, mister?
Well, it is a problem best not overheard by people in the lobbies of office buildings. But this much I can tell you. It is about a horse and $50,000 insurance. That is why I came to you.
Well, I'd be richer if I'd known more about horses, and poorer if I'd known less about insurance. Maybe in this thing I can break even at least. Come on. I hope you are not too much of a purist to ride in a taxi. Little Nettie looked like he'd stopped growing physically at the age of 14. And every once in a while he talked like his mind had also called it quits at about the same time. The only thing slick about him was his hair. The only thing sharp, his clothes. Liars always talk too much, and little Nettie wouldn't say a word until we were inside my apartment. So even before he started his pitch, I half believed it.
Well, to take it from the beginning, I was born in a stable, and that's not just a figure of speech. They brought the hot water in a feed bucket. So you can understand my deep affection for horses.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, kindly consider this.
Mm-hmm.
One horse in particular, a very brave steed by the name of Pile Driver, has not only made me very famous, but has also made me a very large pile of hay. I have ridden Pile Driver to a win position since he was a maiden.
Pile Driver, huh? Quite a hunk of horse.
Uh-huh. Ah, you remember.
Yeah.
Then you might also remember that he was on his way to becoming one of the big money winners of all time, until I had to go and fall off a livery stable horse while teaching a girl how to ride in Central Park. It busted up my leg, and I might add, my future. To say nothing of Pile Drivers, He hasn't won a race since I got grounded.
Yeah, well, what's all this got to do with insurance?
Mr. Dollar, they are going to murder him.
Oh?
Can you guess why?
I can try. Pile driver is heavily insured. He's also no longer winning races.
He's also a man who can't have a family. No good for studs.
So if pile driver should trip and break a leg, the owner would be entitled to shoot him and he'd still collect the insurance. I know, it's been done.
You have hit the horseshoe nail on the head. Mr. Dollar, I have a considerable bundle of money stashed away and I am willing to devote a considerable lump of it to the purpose of saving pile driver. Now, maybe you wouldn't understand such a thing, but I happen to love that horse.
I understand it, Nettie. Where is he?
Well, he is currently stabled at a track named Hiawatha.
Oh, by the shores of Gitche Gumee?
No, by the shores of Lake Michigan. This is located slightly north of a place called Chicago.
Five telephone calls and a few hundred questions later, I learned that Pile Driver was insured by your company. Got the assignments and was on my way. So, expense account item 2, airfare, Hartford to Chicago, $57.72. Little Nettie insisted on coming along, and he kept the hum of the plane from being humdrum as follows.
Well, Johnny, the gentleman who owns Pile Driver is an old Kentucky mint julep sponge named Colonel Faraday Bushnell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this character has a very black heart hiding beneath a head of white hair.
That's it.
I trusted him until I heard him say what he was going to do. From then on, I have been seriously tempted to wrap these hands around his neck and squeeze. All I can say is he had better not hurt Pile Driver.
Expense account item 3, $16.40. Cab fare, Chicago Municipal Airport, to Hiawatha Racetrack. Arrival time, 10 a.m. To me, a racetrack always smells good. Of horses, green grass, and excitement. There you are, driver. Keep the change.
Well, this, as the saying goes, is it, Mr. Dollar. You'll have to take it from here.
Okay.
Oh, hey, one last word of warning. Watch out for his daughter, Lila.
Well, why? Is she dangerous?
To a guy like me? No. But to a guy like you, yes.
Pardon me, miss. Can you tell me where I'll find the boss around here, Colonel Bushnell?
I was just going to chase you away. But you don't look like just another hay and grain merchant. What's selling?
I'm not. I'm buying. Where's your daddy?
How do you know the colonel is my daddy?
Well, he told me he had a pretty daughter.
Oh, well, thanks. Just who are you, mister?
Well, as for the name, that's Johnny Dollar. As for my business, that's trying to buy one of your father's horses.
Well, the colonel won't be back for a little bit, but I'm bossing while he's away. I'll tell you now, I don't think he's figuring on selling any of his horses. But I'll be glad to show them to you.
Good enough. But there's only one I'm really interested in. Pile Driver.
Pile Driver? Why, no, Daddy wouldn't sell him.
Why not?
Well, he's practically one of the family. He put me through the last 2 years of college.
Do you mind if I see him anyway?
Why, no, not at all. Right over here.
Okay.
Here, baby. You have company, darling. Meet Mr. Dollar.
Hello. That's quite a horse.
Now, he's just a perfect deer, aren't you, darling? Mr. Dollar, why do you want to buy Pile Driver?
Oh, he's a great horse. Got a great record.
Have you been following him lately?
Yeah. Oh, no, he hasn't been winning. That ought to make his price cheap and the odds long when he gets back running. I just happen to think I can make a winner out of him again.
But his spirit's all gone. How do you think you're going to do that?
Well, I told you, his price might go right back up.
Johnny, darling.
Hmm?
I can't help it, darling.
Hey, well, yes, wait a minute. Let's let go. Wait a minute.
Please, what? Darling, please.
It was great fun. But what was it for?
Johnny, you shouldn't have, right out here in the open.
Huh?
Oh, Leo.
Yeah, what's going on?
Now, wait, Leo, honey.
This guy ain't your brother, he'll wish he was. Besides, that's no way to kiss brothers. You, get out of here.
Look, Buster, if you aren't this girl's father, you'd better start doing some wishing.
Oh, you think so, huh?
This is the roughest game of post office I ever got mixed up in.
Like that, please.
Johnny, what are you doing?
Oh,
hammerheads like this hammerlock. But I've got tough now, and I'll bust his arm.
Gentlemen, what's going on here? You spectators there, run along now about your business. Leo, I must say I am surprised at you fighting in front of a lady.
Oh, Dad.
Get him off of me.
Here, young man, I demand that you dismount, Mr. Corbin.
Well, sooner or later, I guess I'll have to. Now, listen, Leo, are you paying close attention?
Yeah.
After I let you up, if you make one move except away from here, I'll give you a pair of fat ears, okay? Oh, look at the suit. I'm going to start wearing knee pads.
Come on, Leo, honey. Let's get away from here. I hope you're not blaming me for what happened.
I don't know who
to blame.
Now, see here. I demand an explanation.
So do I. I came here to get in the horse business, and I end up in a fight racket. Who is that guy?
That gentleman, sir, is Leo Corbett, a brother horse owner. And I might do the favor of warning you that Mr. Corbett is a hard enough man in business dealings. But when it comes to my daughter, he's downright violent.
Your daughter was downright impulsive.
Maybe so. But Leo is hardly the type to stand by while some other fellow kisses his girl. And I saw that happen with my own eyes.
I don't want to worry you, Colonel. I didn't come here to collect lipstick samples. Well, there's one thing I can be glad about in my encounter with Mr. Leo Corbett.
What is that?
That he isn't James J. Come on, Colonel. Let's start business. Hey, bartender.
Hey, Mr. Dollar, over here.
Oh, never mind. There's my man over there. How are you, Ninny?
Oh, I'm fine. Hey, but you, where did you catch that mouse under your eye?
Oh, I'm sharp as a trap, I am. You were so right about Miss Bushnell. She's not only dangerous, she's daffy.
Huh? I didn't know she could hit that hard.
No, she didn't. Let's just say that she has a novel way of introducing people to her boyfriend.
Oh.
You know him, Leo Corbett?
Well, if I knew any more, I'd be the racing commission's witness. He owns a string of very fast horses who run very slow until the odds get right. Then he bets him up to the brisket, wins himself a potful. It's also rumored that he is stiff competition to the Perry Mutual machine. He books big bets among the owners.
Well, they'll catch up to him sooner or later. They always do.
Amen. But about that human glue factory, my friend, the horse-killing colonel, what's with him?
Well, I offered him $60,000 for file driver.
Huh?
That's $10,000 more than he'd get if he knocked him off and collected the insurance.
Yeah, where are you going to lay your mitts on 60 G's? I haven't got that kind of dough.
We don't need that kind of dough, little Nettie. You see, I told Bushnell that I was sending to California for my private vet and that he'd be here in 3 days. And that once he pronounced the horse sound, I'd give him the money.
Yeah, but that only means that pile driver is safe for another 3 days. And then what?
In those 3 days, it's up to me to prove intent. And if it's there, I'll prove it. And have the policy canceled. Once that's done, he'll probably be willing to peddle the horse for $10,000.
That I can handle. But in the meantime, I'm not taking any chances, see? I'm keeping Pile Driver under my own personal eye.
I wish you wouldn't, Eddie. We don't want the colonel getting suspicious.
I can't help it, Mr. Dollar. I just can't help it.
Okay, Eddie, but don't blow it. Be careful. Like all racetracks, Hiawatha was surrounded by motor courts and bungalows with rooms for rent. So, expense account item 4, $3, room rent. I set the tin alarm clock for 8 and my ear for any time and went most of the way to sleep. First things first, I dreamed of girls. Then, I dreamed of fire engines. And suddenly, I realized why. I was hearing some. I bounced out of bed and over to the window. There I saw an incendiary sunset hanging over the racetrack stables. I jumped into my pants and into the landlady's car and got over there as fast as the 1929 Ford could take me. Hey, you. You.
What?
Out inside.
The guards were looking for a little guy with a lamp who was hanging around.
Oh, where'd he go?
I didn't see him, but I hear he ran in the fire and didn't come out. Some crank, I guess.
I had one particular horse to get to in a hurry. And I hope one particular guy. The door to Pile Driver's stall was closed and padlocked. I crowbarred the stable out of the wood with the pick end of a fire axe. Threw the door open
grabbed a lungful of fresh air, closed my eyes, and slammed into the smoke. I could have been smoked to death, burned to death, or stamped to death, but I had to take the chance. Steady, yo. Whoa, whoa, pile driver. Now, take it easy. Easy, easy, boy. I whacked him on the rump with the axe handle, then dropped it. I slipped to my knees, started groping across the straw-covered floor. I knew that if there was any air in there, that's where it would be. And if there was an ex-jockey in there, that's where he would be. And that's where he was. In the first corner I tried, I crawfished backwards toward the door, dragging him inch by inch out into the clean, cold shower of fresh night air. But I could have saved myself a trip. Little Nettie Montana was dead. He'd had a horseshoe hung on his forehead, but not for luck. And all I could think of at the moment was, a jockey's best friend is not always his horse. Tough luck. Nice try, little Nettie.
Mr. Dollar, this is horrible. Why, it's little Nettie.
It sure is. What's left of little Nettie?
You don't...
Yeah, I mean he's dead. You know, when I was a kid, I knew about a story with a horse and a woman in it. Helen of Troy. I should have remembered that before I tangled with you. Why don't you get lost?
Why, what is the matter with you?
Look, Miss Bushnell, 2 minutes after I met you, you bagged me into a fist fight with your boyfriend with a phony kiss. I don't know how much you had to do with putting little Nettie where he is, but I intend to find out.
Why, you're insane. Any fool, even you, Mr. Dollar, can plainly see that this boy's been kicked in the head by a horse.
Lila, child, what are you doing here?
Why, I saw
Why?
The...
What? Who's that on the ground? What? This little Nettie. Don't tell me he's dead.
What would you be if you got kicked in the head by a horse, Colonel?
Why, the poor boy. I held this lad in deep affection until just a few months back. He was my best jockey. What on earth was he doing around here at this time of night?
From all I can see, little Nettie swapped his life for pile drivers. As small as he was, it's a pretty big price to pay. Although I guess you wouldn't think so, would you?
What? What's this? I demand an explanation of precisely what you mean, sir.
I mean that to some people, a dead horse is more valuable than a live one. Too bad you can't go count your money. I gotta take my friend to the morgue. An hour later, little Nettie was resting better than I was. I'd made my report to the police and was back pacing the floor of my rented room. There wasn't a long walk. Yeah?
I gotta see you right away.
Why don't you start another fire? That'll draw me.
I didn't have anything to do with that fire, but I must talk to you right away. Where can I meet you?
Have you got a car?
Yes, I'll come any place.
Well, pick me up here in 20 minutes. Come alone, and we'll take a little drive to the country. I want it to be just the three of us. You and me and the Dewdrops. Dawn was making a dark gray promise in the sky when she picked me up, and a few easy-to-please birds had found something to sing about. During the first 5 miles, Lila denied everything except that she was a woman, and there was no hiding that. I had her pull in under a tree and said, "Well, then why'd you call me?"
It was something you said to my father about a horse being more valuable dead than alive.
You sold me out once. What are you planning on now, selling out your old man? You women. You know, if the truth is ever told, it'll probably come out that Goldilocks cut her grandmother's throat to swipe the gold out of her teeth.
Please don't make fun of me.
Fun, she calls it. Well, you got something to spill, get it off your chest.
My father owes Leo Corbett $50,000. He lost it betting on pile driver. Leo's been demanding his money, and Father doesn't have it. And I heard Leo practically order Father to destroy pile driver for the insurance.
And what did Daddy dear say to that?
He said he'd do it. But I know he wouldn't. I know he didn't set that fire.
How do you know?
I just know, that's all.
Now, that'll sound good to a jury. Why are you coming to me with all this stuff?
Because you're our only hope. Can't you buy Power Driver right away? It would solve everything.
Everything but one thing.
What's that?
Why did you go to all that trouble to get me punched in the eye?
Oh, that?
Yeah.
I just wanted to show Leo that he wasn't going to have everything his own way. And you look strong enough to do it.
Well, that's a stupid answer. Why not? Makes a stupid kind of sense. She dropped me off at my rooming house where I dropped off to sleep. It was, however, only a 4-hour plunge. Expense account item 5, $650. Cab fare to headquarters, Homicide Division, Chicago Police. That's one city where the cops still wear an old-fashioned star, but they sure do operate with a new-fashioned speed. As witness, the enclosed report made by Lieutenant Craig 6 hours after filing of inquiry.
According to the findings of the autopsy, Dollar, your hunch, or whatever you call it, was right. The deceased, little Nettie, was not kicked to death by a horse. Examination of the wound reveals that it was administered by a new horseshoe. A shoe on a horse's hoof would have left traces of the straw, etc. We say that the fatal weapon was swung by person or persons unknown. As you suggested, he'd have to have been standing on his head to have the horseshoe make the mark it did if the horse had kicked him.
The lieutenant had made only one mistake. He should have said person or persons known. Expense account item 6, 10 cents, 2 telephone calls. The idea I was working in, I'll give you for nothing. Expense account item 7, 650. Cab fare to administration building, Hiawatha Racetrack, where the afternoon's program was in progress, and where I got the wholehearted cooperation of the track officials and the use of a vacant office in which to hold the meeting I had set up. I sat myself in a swivel chair and waited. Come in.
Mr. Dollar, I can't tell you how happy I am that our little transaction is about to be consummated. If you have the money with you, sir, pile driver is yours.
Now, wait a minute, Colonel. Let's not go consummating too quickly.
But, my boy, you indicated over the telephone.
I indicated over the phone just this. I said my offer was as good as it ever was. And to tell you the truth, it's not very good.
No, see, who's that?
Sit down, Colonel. Come in.
Why, Leo! What are you doing up here?
Anytime anybody shows up to hand over $60,000 to you for pile driver, I'm going to be here. That's exactly what this smart guy called me up to tell me he's about to do.
Now, gentlemen, let's take it easy. Before I do anything, I want to make sure I'm not doing business with a murderer.
Sir, I demand an explanation.
What about you, Leo?
Yeah, so do I.
Well, here it is. The Chicago police know two things. One, that last night's fire was set. And two, that little Nettie was murdered. And that little Nettie got a couple of lungfuls of smoke before he got hit over the head with a horseshoe. That means that whoever hit him over the head sucked in some smoke, too.
Well, I've never heard such a pack of nonsense in my life.
What are you getting at, wise guy?
Just what I told you. I don't want to do business with a murderer. Especially $60,000 worth. But I've made it easy on you to prove that you aren't. You see, I got a doctor in the next room with portable X-ray equipment. If you've got fire smoke in your lungs, it'll show up. Now, how about it?
Why, this is ridiculous.
Why don't you leave the Dick Tracy stuff to the funny papers?
Because I don't feel like laughing. Now, once more, how about it?
Get it. I still don't know what this tomfoolery is about, and I'll feel downright silly while I'm doing it, but I'm willing to take my chances.
Okay. Leo, you're first. Follow me. Turning your back on a murderer is no way to stay healthy, but very often it's a good way to get him to make his move. This one did, right out the door, knocking me down en route, and the chase was on. Out of the building and out toward the grandstand and the racing circle.
And there they go. On the outside, Dreamy Boy by a neck. It's a truck hunter by a winger and a funny girl by a head. And at the corner, it's Dreamy Boy.
It may have been Dreamy Boy at the quarter and on the track, but it was my quarry by 50 lengths as he headed up an aisle into the grandstand. Dreamy Boy was still doing fine down there, and I was moving up here, but up near the top of the grandstand and onto the ramp leading to the press box section. Just as Dreamy Boy hit the three-quarter, we hit the grandstand roof. And then we went into the stretch.
Hey, Corbett, it's hopeless. You can't get much farther. You're running out of room.
I slid behind a ventilator and showed myself to draw his shot. He was lousy. If he hadn't been, he'd be dictating this with an air-conditioned elbow.
Okay, Corbett, you've had it. I've been counting your shots.
Corbett tried a few ventilators himself. And then apparently he decided the second time he fought me, he'd do better. He rushed in swinging. I was doing great, pretty punches. But he finally moved inside and threw one. I ducked low, but he came up fast with his knee. I sat down, and he took off. Straight to the back corner edge of the pitched roof. He swung over the side and started to shinny down the 100-foot rain pipe. But that pipe was built to carry rain, not people. Finish line of one tiny segment of the human race, it was gambler, arsonist, murderer, Leo Corbett, by a head. Expense account item 8, dinner for two at the Shangri-La in downtown Chicago, $34.40. Dinner itself only took 40 minutes and 8 of the dollars. The rest of the evening and the money was spent listening to the story of her life. A story which would not, by any means, win any Pulitzer Prize, or, for that matter, any husband. But sometimes when you're interested in a girl like Lila, you have to act like you're interested in what she's saying. Expense account item 9, $57.72. Airfare, Chicago to Hartford. Item 10, $1.50. One book to read on airplane, titled How to Win at the Races. As if I just hadn't found out. Expense account total, $1,449.22. I guess you could call that horse sense. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes and stars Charles Russell. Script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Bill Conrad, Dora Singleton, Jerry Hausner, Herb Butterfield, and Hal March.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. On Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from October 8, 1949, the program, after 12 years, would air its last broadcast on September 30, 1962, known as the last day of radio's golden age. You are listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for a series that also helped close out the golden age of radio, airing a broadcast on that same fateful day, It's Suspense, with the story The Death Parade. Agnes Moorehead stars from May 15, 1956.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a transcribed story of a woman who finds a letter warning of death and has only 3 hours to deliver it. We call it the Death Parade. So now, starring Paula Winslow, here is tonight's suspense play, The Death Parade.
Johnson, let's try and talk about this, huh? Now, this girl fell or was pushed off a roof this morning, and you say you were the only other person there at the time?
Well, I was. I told you. Oh, what do you mean, pushed? You mean you think that I... Oh, how can you?
I know you're upset, but will you just take it easy and try to answer
that? Upset? I'm nearly out of my mind. I don't see how you can expect me to tell you anything. First you accuse me, and now you... Oh, how can you, policeman, be so unfeeling? All I was trying to do was... Oh, it's freezing in here. You've no right to...
Miss Johnson. Try some of this coffee. It'll make you feel better. Now, you've told us you know something about this accident, something more than we already know.
Yes. Yes, I do, Lieutenant. I mean, it never would have happened. Don't you see?
Sure. Now, come on, drink this. This will help you.
Oh, I'm so nervous. Oh, it spilled.
Well, that's all right. It's all right. We'll clean it up later.
Well, that's how it started. You see? That's how it started this morning. Just like that. The coffee. That poor girl wouldn't have died if the coffee hadn't spilled. That's just how it started. My name's Ellen Johnson. I work at the Farnsworth Chemical Plant. For 12 years, I've been there and never missed an hour of work. That is, until today. It was so unnecessary. That horrible, rude little man. He was the one. I'm very precise about my daily habits. Very. When you live alone, you arrange things that way. In the morning, I arise and allow myself time to take coffee and toast at the cafe on my corner. I've always disliked cooking in the morning. I leave the cafe at 8:15 precisely in order to be at my desk exactly at 9. This morning was the same, just the same, except for that horrible man. He was awful. As I sat at the counter, I could feel him there, 2 seats away, thin and dark, making a nasty noise as he drank his coffee. It was all his fault.
Going to see the parade this afternoon, miss?
Oh, no. I'm afraid I'll be working.
That's too bad. Should be good for business.
Yes, I imagine so.
Anything else?
Hey, you.
Oh, no, thank you.
It's 25. Coffee and toast, is it right?
Yes.
Thanks.
Hey, you. Pass the sugar, will you?
Good morning.
See you tomorrow.
What's the matter? I asked for the sugar. You can't pass it?
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, why, look at that. You deliberately spilled that coffee all over my skirt.
Ain't that a shame. What a clumsy. Gee, am I sorry.
He wasn't. He wasn't in the least sorry. He'd done it on purpose, on purpose. I was wearing a gray silk dress, and it was probably ruined. He just stood there and wiped at the stain with his napkin, smiling. Dirty, crooked teeth. I pushed him away and walked out. I knew I was going to be late because I had to change, so I went home again. If I hadn't gone home, this awful thing might never have happened. It took me 15 minutes to get back to the apartment, change my dress, and leave again for the office. I'd walked 3 blocks when I saw the letter. It was lying on the pavement in front of an apartment house. Because I'm very meticulous about my filing in the office, I can't bear things to be out of place. I suppose that's why I picked it up. It was unsealed and addressed simply to Miss Sheila Mannix. No house number or street. Dear Sheila Mannix, you don't know me. I just got into the city. It doesn't matter who I am, but this is a warning. Believe me, you better take notice. Jack's got it in for you. Oh, I stopped reading. There was more, but I didn't want to go on. It frightened me a little, and... Well, I'm not one to pry into other people's business. But this wasn't prying, really. It wasn't. The letter was important. Whoever had written it must have forgotten to put the address on it, and it had fallen out of their pocket. I thought of the police then. I should have told them about the letter, but I didn't. I didn't know what else was in it then. All I could think of at that moment was finding Sheila Mannix and giving her the letter and forgetting it. I went back to my own apartment and looked through the telephone book. There were 2 Sheila Mannixes listed. The first lived on Maple Street and the second on South Tower. I rang the Maple number first.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Is this Miss Sheila Mannix speaking?
Oh, Mrs. Sheila Mannix? Who's this?
Well, my name is Ellen Johnson, and I found a letter this morning addressed to a Sheila Mannix. I thought it was important, and I wanted to make sure it got to the right party.
Well, who's it from?
Well, that's it, you see. I don't know.
Have you opened it?
Well, yes, but I only read a few lines.
Oh.
Do you know someone named Jack?
Jack? Well, yes, I do have a nephew.
Oh, then
well,
perhaps...
Well, but he's in Colorado, though.
It seemed to be some sort of a warning.
Warning? I'm afraid I don't understand.
The letter says that Jack has got it in for you. It's a... Well, a warning.
Well, I'm afraid the letter isn't for me because, you see, my Jack is only 10 years old.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to have troubled you.
Oh, it's all right. Bye.
As I hung up, I realized that the Sheila Mannix I was looking for might not even have a telephone. She might not even be living in the city any longer. I looked at my watch. Oh, 9 o'clock. There was my job, but... The second Sheila Mannix listed in the directory lived on South Tower. I dialed the number, then got the letter out of my purse and read it. This time, I read all of it. Dear Sheila Mannix, don't know me. I just got into the city. Who I am. It's a warning. Believe me, you better take notice. Jack's got it in for you. Just drunk one night, told me about it. Somebody you knew pretty well died last year. He didn't fall off that building. He was pushed, and Jack did it. He said he was going to get you, too. Oh, dear. I would have told the police, but they'd start to get nosy about me. Jack's on his way here, and the way he talks, he'd better not find you around. He talked crazy about a parade. The corner of Main and Thomas at 12 o'clock. That's when he's going to do it. A friend. The second Sheila Mannix's address was 317 South Tower Street. I got my car out and drove there. It must have been nearly 9:45 when I drew up outside. It was an old rooming house. Oh, hurry up. Come on.
Yeah? What do you want?
Well, I'm very sorry to trouble you. Is your name Sheila...
Yeah, talk louder. I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wonder if you could tell me, is your name Sheila Mannix?
No.
Oh,
no, it's not.
But the phone book has a Sheila Mannix listed at this address.
Well, it's her phone. She pays for it. I never have no cause to use it.
She does live here, then?
She has a room upstairs. What's the matter? Are you the police?
Oh, no. Well, does she work? Is she at work now?
How should I know? I never ask her where she goes. What's she done?
You mean you don't know? You don't know where she works? Well, then, do you know where she lived before she moved here?
No, she never says nothing. She's quiet and keeps to herself.
Oh, but where can I find her? It's important that I learn where she is right away.
She'll be home prompt by 7, always is. Come back then if you got to see her.
Oh, 7 will be too late. I've got to find her now before 12.
There ain't no use shouting at me, miss. I can't tell you no more than I have already. Don't know nothing about Sheila Mannix.
I knew I'd wasted far too much time. I had to call the police. There was a drugstore on the corner, and I ran down the block to it. I was terribly afraid, and even more, there was a feeling that the house I'd just left was the home of the woman I couldn't find.
Good morning. Can I help you?
Oh, yes. Do you have a phone?
There's one over there, but it's out of order.
Oh, well, then could I use yours? It's an emergency.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have a
phone. Well, I've got to call the police. Now... Oh, look, I've never been mixed up in anything like this before. It's a letter I found this morning, a warning about somebody being killed.
Oh, Say, that sounds bad. There's a phone in the next door. Use that.
Well, maybe you know her. She lives down the block.
Well, who's that?
Sheila Mannix. She's the one. At least I think so.
Mannix? Oh, yes. Mannix. Yes, she comes in often to have a prescription filled.
Oh.
Very nice young woman.
But do you know anything about her? I mean, where she works? I've got to find her right away.
Well, no,
now,
I
please,
don't.
It's urgent. I asked her landlady, and she didn't know.
It seems to me she did mention it once.
Well, think. But... You must think. Now, please.
Well, now, wait a minute. It was just the other day we were chatting while I filled her prescription. Let me see. She said something about
it. Was it a restaurant? A cashier, maybe?
No,
department
no,
store? Elevator operator?
No.
Oh, dear. Hats? Clothes?
No,
shoes?
I don't think so.
An usher? Telephone operator?
No, that doesn't hit somehow.
Oh,
sorry.
You're not thinking. Now, try.
Well, listen, ma'am, if I could help you, I would.
Oh, you know, well, has she any friends in the neighborhood? Somebody who might know?
Oh, never mentioned them.
Can't you remember? Maybe she worked in an office. Well?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll be with you in just a minute, sir. Excuse me a moment. There's a customer there. You better go next door and call the
police.
But
can't you remember?
I'll be back.
Maybe a chorus girl. Well, but does she work in a bookstore? Oh, I can't wait. I'll come back after I call.
Ma'am, wait a minute.
Yes?
I remember.
Oh.
You said bookstore.
Yes.
It's a book company or something like that. Simmons. Yeah, that was it. Simmons Book and Stationery Corporation. That was it. Simmons.
Thank you.
Book
thank you. It's on Main. Yes, I know the place. Thank you very much.
Good morning. May I help you?
Oh, yes, please. I'd like to speak to Miss Mannix. Miss Sheila Mannix. I understand that she works here.
I'm very sorry, ma'am, but Miss Mannix had an appointment.
She's not here?
Sorry, but...
But where did she go?
I think to the doctor.
Well, what doctor? Where? Now, when did she leave?
Well, now, if you'll wait here, I'll find out for you.
I could have cried. And that silly, precious little salesman, he took forever. How long does it take to get an address? I started to walk to the back of the store when he came down the aisle toward me.
I'm sorry to have taken so long. A customer on the phone, you know.
It's all right. I don't care. Just give me that doctor's address.
Why, yes, I have it right here.
Listen,
yes?
If she comes back... If I miss her,
yes.
You tell her to stay right here.
Yes.
You understand? Don't let her leave the store again until I come back.
No.
Don't let her leave. It's a matter of life and death.
Oh? Well, all right. Is something wrong?
Something wrong. I ran to the telephone booth. I knew I'd done as much as I could alone to save that poor girl.
Police Department, Sergeant Leonard.
Police. Now listen, please listen carefully. There's a murder going to be committed at 12 o'clock.
Who is it?
Oh, what does it matter? My name's Ellen Johnson. Please, I found a letter in the street this morning. It was to a woman called Mannix, a Sheila Mannix.
Would you spell that, please?
Oh, Mannix, M-A-N-N-I-X. There's not time for me to...
When did you find the letter?
I told you this morning. What difference does it make? Oh, it was 9, I think.
Well, why didn't you call earlier?
Well, I didn't. I tried to find her myself. I think I know where she is now.
Have you got the letter with you?
Yes.
Would you read it, please?
Oh, there isn't time. You've got to send some men here. It's a warning. Somebody called Jack is going to kill her at 12 o'clock on the corner of Main and Thomas.
There's a parade going on then. Now, what does this woman look like? Can you give us a description?
No, I've never seen her. I don't even know her.
You say you think you know where she is.
Yes, at a Dr. Morton, 101 Flower Street.
Where are you calling from?
Simmons Book and Stationery Store. She works here.
Well, will you get a description of the woman, please?
Oh.
I'll wait.
Yes, of course, but don't hang up. I found the young man again, and he told me what Sheila Mannix looked like. I got back to the phone and told the officer. Short, about 5'2", thin, possibly 90 pounds, wearing a brown coat with a brown shoulder strap bag.
We'll try to find her, Miss Johnson. Now, please stay there. I'll have an officer come to the store to pick up the letter.
I put the receiver on the hook and sat in the booth. I was shaking. My hands were wet. It was 11:20. Somewhere outside, I heard a band playing. The parade must have started. I stayed in the shop, and the minutes passed. 11:30, 25 to 12. At 20 minutes to, I just couldn't stand it any longer. The waiting, the awful waiting. I had to do something. I called Sheila Mannix's house again. There was just that chance, that slight chance. Maybe she went home after the doctor. Maybe she's there. Oh, two more. No, three. Let it go three more. Oh,
there. You must. You must.
Hello?
Oh, Miss Mannix.
Who is this?
Miss Mannix. You'll never know. Oh, listen. You don't know me.
You have to speak louder. I can't hear a thing you're saying.
Who is this? Miss Mannix?
No, Miss Mannix isn't here. This is the landlady. I'm cleaning up. Is there a message?
I couldn't stay in that store any longer. I gave the letter to the salesman and told him to give it to the police when they arrived. It was 11:45. Main Street was alive with people. It seemed as though the whole city had turned out to watch the parade. To me, it was the same parade of last year and all the years before. But today, there was a difference. The floats and the bright carriages meant nothing to me. I pushed my way along the street toward the intersection of Main and Thomas. I couldn't have stayed away if it were my own life depending on it. The crowd was so thick that it was impossible to see anything from the street, and I had to see. Then I thought of the Benson building and the roof. If I was up on the roof, I could see everything that happened on that corner. It was 11:55 when I got in the elevator and took it up to the 19th floor. I had to walk to the roof, and I could scarcely breathe as I opened the door, stepped out into the bright sun. Instinctively, I knew that this was the building, the same building that the man in the letter had been pushed from last year. For a minute, I didn't see anyone, and then, at the corner, standing near the edge, looking down, I saw her. A short woman, quite thin, dressed in a brown coat and a shoulder strap bag. Oh, Miss Mannix. You are Miss Mannix, aren't you? I've been looking for you. It's about a man called Jack. He's looking. Oh, it's all right now. It's all right. Please, don't be frightened. Don't move back. Don't. The edge. Don't. Oh, what's the matter? Get away from there. Oh, no. No. Ow!
And that's how it happened, huh?
Yes, I tried.
You spend from 9 o'clock until 12 looking for, and you don't call us until 45 minutes before it happens.
Well, I told you why.
Miss Johnson? I think you're lying.
Lying? Why, how dare you say that? I was doing what I
thought
was
right.
You
picked up a letter, a warning letter, and you go to a janitor, you call people on the phone, but not the police.
Well,
you visit Sheila Mannix's house, you talk to the landlady, you talk to the neighborhood druggist, salesman of the bookstore, all witnesses, all alibis.
I wanted to find
her. And then you call the police when you're sure it's too late.
Well, how did I know she'd be up there? How?
Well, you've set up a mighty nice alibi for yourself. You were alone with Sheila Mannix. Now, who's to say you didn't push her?
Oh, stop it. You don't know what you're talking about. You've no right. I was trying to help her, that's all. I won't listen to you. I'm going
home. Sit down, Miss Johnson. Now, go on, sit down. That's better. I'm holding you for a while. It's going to take more than a cock and bull story like that to get you out of this. We're going to check, Miss Johnson. We're going to do an awful lot of checking.
I was a good citizen. I did my duty. I tried to save her, and you...
Yeah.
You would...
Can I see you for a minute?
Yeah. Now, you just stay right there, miss. We're not through yet.
Oh, murder. That's what they're saying. I murdered him. He's saying that to me. After all the good, I was only trying... Now, what are they saying? It's about me. I know it. I know it.
Well, that does it, then. Well, Miss Johnson, we know what happened now.
You know? What do you mean you know? I told you. That's how it happened. Every word.
I'll tell you something. I've got to believe you. There's nothing I can do about it.
Nothing you can do? Well, what should you do? Instead of frightening the life out of me, you should...
Now, will you listen to me for a change? Miss Johnson, I'd like nothing better than to throw the book at you, but I can't. We've got the man called Jack. He was picked up in the parade.
There. I was right.
The fellow that wrote the letter you found figured Miss Mannix might have moved. He didn't know where, so this morning he called the police. He told them the story, and that's how we caught up.
Well, then that... Then she was safe. He couldn't have killed her.
That's right.
Well... Why was she on the roof? Why did she go there? She wasn't in any danger then, was she?
Oh, yes, she was. From you, because you found her and frightened her to death.
I was only telling her that there was nothing to be afraid of.
Oh, sure, that's all.
Do you know she was standing in the same place where her boyfriend was killed a year ago? And then you come along and mention the name of the man that she knew killed him? Now maybe you know why she was afraid and backed away from you. You didn't do a thing. Well, I want you to know something. I want you to sleep with it for the rest of your life. If you just called the police when you picked up that letter, Sheila Mannix would be alive right now. Now, you think about that, huh?
I can't see where I was wrong. Well, maybe I should have called sooner, but I did call. If you hadn't taken
Get out of here, will you? Get out, please, Miss Johnson. It's just too bad we can't send you where the other guy's going. He killed last year, you did it today, and just as sure as if you'd shot her. Now, go on, get out, Miss Johnson, please.
Well, it's all right, Lieutenant. I understand. I can see why you're upset, and I am sorry. I was only doing what I thought right. That's all. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't. If they'd got there sooner, it never would have happened. I've nothing to reproach myself about. Nothing. Oh, dear, I'm so upset. Whole day's work. My gray silk dress ruined. They'll never be able to get that coffee stain out.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from May 15th, 1956 on CBS. That closes this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.